Learn more at LifeLock.com.
Good morning and welcome to True Talk. This is your host, Sama Jarrah. We're going to be opening the phone lines today. I want to thank everybody who supported WMNF and helped us reach our goal. Listen to Fairouz. She's Lebanese. She was born in the late 1930s. She's an icon. She has sold more than 150 million records, one of the highest in the Arab world. This is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. Welcome back to True Talk. This is your host, Samar Jarrah. And on the phone with me, I have Daniel Marans. He is a journalist and a reporter with the Huffington Post. He writes on the presidential campaign and other issues. And the reason we have Daniel is because something interesting just formulated in the past few days. A pro-Israel Democrats coach type of group to coach presidential candidates on how to handle left-leaning activists and especially one particular group. It's very interesting. It all happened because of something that went viral, but I think Dan will explain it to us. Good morning, Daniel.
Great to be here. Happy to talk about this.
Yes, Daniel, because really I did not hear about it except when I was looking through the Huffington Post on Twitter, and it caught my surprise because I'm not sure if it was yesterday or the day before that I saw that short clip where presidential Democratic running Elizabeth Warren was taking pictures in, I think, Massachusetts. Can you tell us what happened?
Yes, so Elizabeth Warren, at the end of all of her events, allows people to take photos with her, and they're very proud of that as the campaign. She talks about she's got, I think, nearly 40,000 pictures with her supporters or people that have come to hear her speak. And two young women, actually two Jewish American women, said to her, "We appreciate your platform on fighting corruption, but we would also like it if you would pressure the Israeli government to end its military occupation of the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and Gaza in particular." Obviously, Golan Heights is sort of separate. But, they sort of just framed it, the Israeli occupation. And Elizabeth Warren, now this group, these two activists came from a group of predominantly Jewish Americans called If Not Now, which comes from sort of a a Jewish rabbinic proverb, if not now, when, then when.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea being a call to action on morality and social justice to say that the Israeli occupation does not reflect their Jewish values and speak in their name. And so they did what's known as sort of bird-dogging, which is showing up and pressing a candidate in person for what their spontaneous reaction would be on a particular issue. Now, Elizabeth Warren, when she was asked about that, she said very quickly, yes, yes, I'm right there with you. Now, they touted that as an endorsement of pressuring the Israeli government on the occupation. How exactly that will shake out when Warren is pressed on it in a more formal setting and can elaborate that, elaborate on that is one thing. But what's sort of remarkable about this debate is that it is so shifted to the right in terms of power in Washington toward those who only want to be apologists for the Israeli government's behavior, that this one incident, however ambiguous, however minor, was viewed with great alarm by a group of sort of what I might call not just pro-Israel Democrats, though I use that in the headline, but really Israel hawks who do not want to see more pressure on the Israeli government from the U.S. government, but still identify as Democrats and are concerned about this younger generation, particularly younger generation of Jewish Americans, who are pressuring American elected officials and American Jewish institutions as well to take a more, what they believe is a more moral approach to say that it is not acceptable to occupy another group of people and deny them their political rights for decades on end. And that really has these sort of more hawkish groups worried. And I don't know if you want to take it from there, but I got my hands on a memorandum.
Yeah, exactly. That was my second question. Okay, so what are they advising, for instance, Elizabeth Warren to do next time she is caught in a surprise like that? What is
so
it?
They responded to this incident with great alarm, and they sent a memo to all the Democratic presidential candidates. It's a group called Democratic Majority for Israel. It was founded by Mark Melman, a longtime Democratic pollster. Its board looks like a who's who of Democratic insiders in Washington, including Paul Begala, a former advisor to Bill Clinton. And it basically, it says, don't be fooled by these people. It really demonizes this group, if not now. It sort of says, it walks right up to the line of basically calling themselves hating Jews. It calls it a very anti-Israel group, et cetera, which is really not an accurate characterization of the group. And it says, instead of focusing on the Israeli occupation, you should fall back on a sort of both sides narrative that, well, both the Israeli government and the Palestinian Authority or representatives of the occupied Palestinians need to sort of make concessions and compromises in order to reach an agreement at the table. It mm-hmm. doesn't. They're not interested in accounting for the power differential. They're not interested in accounting for the increasingly rightward and even racist turn of the Israeli government, or the fact that, and when we go talk about the power differential, that Israel gets, you know, $3 billion a year in military aid and a veto at the United Nations, thanks to the United States. And so that's sort of the approach that, well, we need to let these two parties who are not of equal power standing come to the table together on their own rather than pressure one side. And I think it really reflects an attitude that is certainly frozen in time. I mean, if you think about the hopes or that some Americans, and particularly American Democrats, had related to Bill Clinton's peace process 20, 25 years ago, that's not really widely shared, you know, after so many wars in Gaza, after such expansion in the Israeli settlements in the West Bank. That's not broadly shared, I would say, among rank and file Democrats. But they want to maintain that elite consensus that has existed.
What I found interesting, Dan, is that they're suggesting for these candidates to talk about the two-state solution, which I don't think the Israeli government is supportive of the two-state solution. I mean, they say it publicly, but they work against it all the time. Can you address that?
That's right. I mean, I think, again, this refuses to acknowledge how things have changed on the ground in the past 20, 25 years. And so you had for many years in Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, people are critical of him in many different ways, but he effectively acted like the police force for the Israeli government. He ensured that the sort of attacks on Israeli civilians from the West Bank in particular were not occurring. And that just was not reciprocated by the Israeli government. There was a huge expansion in settlements. We're now talking about more than 500,000 people who live in either occupied Palestinian East Jerusalem or in the West Bank. And you have a figure in Bibi Netanyahu who's now in office as prime minister there for a decade, who has made a coalition with a political party called Jewish Power. It's a Jewish supremacist party. And he, many, many years ago, he gave lip service, at the beginning of the Obama administration, he gave lip service to the idea of a Palestinian state. But every time he runs for re-election, he says, it won't happen on my watch. I'll make sure it's severely curtailed. Or I'll propose anything that I would be proposed on such terms that I know that no Palestinian leader could accept it. And that, I think, is the perspective of people that are saying, let's take a different approach here. And if that approach requires direct action and protest, then we can do that. And I think, again, you talk about the two-state solution, but and I think what's ironic is that the real progress that was ever made on the two-state solution or towards something like that, and now there are certainly people that favor alternatives like a binational state,
mm-hmm.
but in the 90s under Bill Clinton and prior to that under George H.W. Bush, yes, there was sometimes some pressure on Palestinian leaders, particularly, but in some proportion to the power that they hold in the equation, but there was also enormous pressure on the Israeli government. So it's a rewriting of history. I mean, George H.W. Bush withheld loan guarantees to the Israeli government so that they would come to the table on Israel, on peace. And that was really how progress got moving forward.
I know, Dan, that you have to go, but finally, do you think these young American Jews can really force a more open debate when we come to the last stages of the presidential debates, when we have maybe just four candidates running on the Democratic ticket? Do you think there would be more questions, more debate, or these powerful...
I think that the role that American Jews play is to... give people who already are concerned about Palestinian human rights and do not like the status quo and do not like the way the Israeli government or the U.S. government relates to the Israeli government, it gives them people to ally with and say, listen, the Jewish community is not a monolith. There are people that care about security of the Jewish people and anti-Semitism, including many dedicated young Jewish Americans. Who don't want this to be done in their name and who want a more moral resolution. Because I think the other factor is that the Democratic Party itself is increasingly progressive,
mm-hmm.
At the younger levels, and it's increasingly diverse. And if you think about the historic oppression of black and brown people in the United States and in countries around the world, they are instinctively sympathetic to Palestinians. Because it carries the same, it falls under the same paradigm of a largely white, sort of a complicated issue, but a non-indigenous people, mm-hmm. Sort of exercising their power in a imperialist way over an indigenous people, and I think that resonates very deeply with young Democratic voters and not just Jewish ones.
Yes, I want to thank you, Daniel Maranz, for being on True Talk. I know you have to go, so I will let you go.
Okay.
Thank you
so much. Great to talk with you as always.
Yes, Dan, that was Daniel Maranz. And really, the article is very interesting. It was published July 10th on the website of the Huffington Post. But I'll give you a background on what he was talking about. This is a report about 5.5 minutes. Also accompanies the story, and it kind of gives you more background until we come back and open the phone lines to talk about this. and other issues that are going on. I can't keep up with them, especially, for instance, last week we were talking about the 2020 census and the question of citizenship and how the president wanted to use his executive privilege and force it. And then I think he found out that he's not going to be able to bypass the law and the court system, and it's going to be a struggle the way he did with the Muslim ban. So you know that yesterday he decided that he's not going to go that route, and he will ask agencies to report on people. So at least we have this little minute victory. Lots of things going on. But let me play this very interesting backgrounder on what Dan was talking about. But before that, we need to silence Fairuz. This is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM.
American progressives are increasingly openly critical of Israel, and the stance of some Democrats on the issue clearly reflects that trend.
2020 Democrat contenders did not attend AIPAC.
Omar had to apologize for tweets and public statements challenging the U.S.-Israel relationship.
This needs to be a broader conversation that isn't just always defending Israel at all costs.
But what prompted this generational shift, and what could it mean for the future of U.S. foreign policy?
Their grandparents never even mentioned the word Palestinian, and now they take reality that there is or should be something called Palestine.
Political science professor Wendy Perlman sees three main causes behind the progressive stance on Israel. First, conservatives, specifically white evangelicals, are increasingly aligned with Israel, and that's a political group that progressives don't identify with at all.
A bloc that is a promoter of all sorts of policies and issues and values which are against what many progressives see as standing for.
Then there's the fact that young progressives increasingly look at Israeli policies through a social justice lens that's directly tied to the rising prominence of the boycotts, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel, known as BDS. It aims to stop what it calls Israel's violation of Palestinian human rights through boycotts of brands and events associated with Israel. It also pressures international organizations to economically and culturally isolate Israel.
And BDS has been very successful, I think, in casting the question of Israel as one not of security, which was the primary lens in previous years, in which Israel and pro-Israel parties could justify almost every action Israel took, especially vis-a-vis the Palestinians. And I think many people around the world look at the situation and say, Israel is strong, it defends itself, it has one of the strongest armies in the Middle East, it has a high-income first world economy, and Palestinians' lives are getting worse and worse.
Perlman says BDS' emphasis on equal rights appeals to minorities in the U.S. In fact, Black Lives Matter endorsed BDS in 2016, calling Israel an apartheid state.
BDS is saying we should call Israel apartheid what it is. We should call for equal rights, call for equality, for dignity, for justice. And all of those values are totally resonate with the movement of African Americans in the United States for justice, for equality, for freedom from police brutality and arbitrary violence from the state.
The Anti-Defamation League, a group that fights anti-Semitism, says the BDS movement's criticism of Israel is illegitimate, because it rejects Israel's very existence as a Jewish state. That's an anti-Semitic. Concept, according to the ADL.
Looking around the world, there are so many cases of injustice and human rights violations and oppression that those who criticize BDS say, why are you singling out Israel when there are so many other oppressors in the world? Is Israel being held to a different standard? And if it is being held to a different standard, why? Is that unfair? Is that symptomatic of some sort of anti-Semitism or anti-Jewish opinion?
27 states have laws that prevent their local governments from doing business with organizations that boycott Israel. The ACLU is challenging these anti-boycott laws on the grounds that they violate free political speech. Perlman agrees that the discourse around the U.S.-Israel relationship should not be censored. But she also cautions people on all sides to speak responsibly.
That we should have an open conversation about the U.S. role in enabling Israeli policies such as settlement expansion, such as denial of Palestinian rights. And it is not impossible to have an open conversation that is sensitive, but sensitive not only to the sensitivities of American Jews, but to American Muslims, to American Arabs, to people of all different faiths and backgrounds.
Finally, while criticism of Israel is often rooted in international law and human rights issues that long predate Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, his right-leaning politics and relationship with Trump seem to have accelerated the trend.
These are two right-leaning politicians who are both embroiled in political scandals and corruption, who are helping each other out in moments of political need. That for sure does not sit well with many progressives.
Now, could the American public's changing perception of Israel lead to concrete change on Capitol Hill? It might over time, but influential pro-Israel donors could also slow things way down.
There's a question about whether politicians in determining U.S. policy towards Israel are answering to the preferences of voters. Are they answering to the pressures and preferences of donors? One of the best examples of that is on gun control. That large numbers of Americans who want greater gun control laws, and that doesn't translate into policy. We could very well see that gap on public opinion wanting a tougher U.S. stance in Israel, or a withdrawal of U.S. military aid to Israel, or greater U.S. pressure on Israel settlement expansion. I fear that we could see a gap between public opinion and policy for a long time, because public opinion doesn't necessarily automatically change and translate into policy change. That's the nature of the political system we have and how politics changes.
If you're just joining us, this is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. You were listening to a 5-minute recap of what we were talking about with Daniel Marantz, who was on the show at the beginning, where he talked about a pro-Israel Democrat group that coaches presidential candidates on handling left-leaning activists. That's the question to Democrats and people from the Democratic Party out there. What I have been hearing is that Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, AOS, such young people who were elected into the Congress reflect the new trend in the Democratic Party, more progressive, more left-leaning, more liberal, more open-minded, more pro-justice. And there is, it seems, a struggle between the old guard of the Democratic Party and the new young people. So, for instance, those of you who support Bernie Sanders and find him progressive, like at least when he started 4 years ago during the last election period. Many people say that he was forced to be like that because of the young people, because he talks to them and they reflect that they are different. They are a different generation. They're not interested in launching wars. They prefer to talk. They find that the Palestinian struggle is similar to the immigration struggle, refugee struggle, black struggle, gay and lesbian struggle. They find that all these things are one and the same. So how can you be for instance, against war, but pro-occupation. So I'm not sure what you think of these things, but the number here is 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. You can always send us emails to dj@wmnf.org. dj@wmnf.org. And I have an email from Simon. He says, please stay within the mission statement and at WMNF. We just renewed our contract, Simon. And actually, I don't bring people who are, for instance, under investigation for having sex with young girls to be on the show and to speak about their opinion. I do not promote war. I am not against any any group of people, even if I differ with them. So I think I am really keeping with the mission statement. Let me take a short break. Let me give you the numbers. 813-239-9663. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Fairuz, and then I'm going to take your phone calls as they arrive. This is WMNF. This is WMNF. Something is playing here. I want to play Fairuz.
فلا كنا ولا كنا يا صاحب الوعد خلي الوعد نسيانا أمس انتهينا فلا كنا ولا كنا يا صاحب الوعد خلي الوعد نسيانا ارتحلت حدائق العمر بكيا فاهدأ الآن طاف النعاس على ماضيك وارتحلت حدائق العمر بكيا فاهدأ الآن
Welcome back to True Talk. You were listening to Fairuz. She is from Lebanon. She was born in the late 1930s. And I'm not sure if she is still singing. She's not doing like live concerts. What she does at the moment is release some songs. This is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. Thanks to all the listeners who supported True Talk. We met our goal, and I think WMNF met its goal, but you can always go to the tip jar on WMNF.org. Because I'm looking now at the DJ computer emails, and there are people who are still contributing. So thank you so much for keeping True Talk and WMNF on the air. We have Jack. He has been listening for a while. Again, the number here is 813-239-9663. 813-239-9663. There are other things that I want to talk about, especially Tucker Carlson, I think his name, and the fight he is having with Ilhan Omar and the conspiracy theories he is talking about. But let me go to Jack in Dover. Good morning, Jack. Sorry to keep you waiting for such a long time.
That's quite all right, ma'am. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I'm hoping that you can clarify something with me. I don't quite understand when somebody refers to people by geographical location, when they refer to somebody as being a Saudi or an Israeli, and then all of a sudden they switch to what I think have been taught as a religion, which is Judaism or Judaism. How is it that Jews are often referred to as a geographical location? Can you answer that?
Not really, but maybe you are talking about Israelis in particular, because as Jew is a religion and Islam is a religion and Buddhism is a religion. Yes, I see what you're trying to say, but I think because of the establishment of the State of Israel, the religion was transformed by few people into a geographic location and an entity and a country and all that. But okay. It is not reflective of, like, for instance, if you were listening to the segment that I was airing at the beginning, there are a lot of American Jews, especially young progressive American Jews, who do not necessarily associate themselves with that geographic location in the heart of the Arab world.
Is it because of the religious connotation of this Israelism as a religion, that they want to just keep themselves strictly as being considered Jews?
At the moment, I think with some governments in Israel, they want to have maintain the Jewishness of the state. So okay. You cannot be like a full citizen if you are, let's say, Muslim or Christian, yet born there, or maybe even have citizenship, because there are Palestinians who are part of the state of Israel, the 1948 part of the state of Israel, who have Israeli citizenship, but can be Muslim or Christian. The Jewishness of the state means that that's how you become a prime minister, that's how you become a president, that's how you have full rights. It's just like saying here in the US, you can only be a white Protestant president. And that's how things are.
Okay, I have just one more quick question then, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I understood geographically, you know, going back to religious times, that most Jews all started out as being Saudi Arabians, that they were from Arabia to begin with, then they became Jewish, I guess, by religion, and that a lot of them then became Portuguese.
I cannot say even I know anything about it. From what I know is that they are from the same descendants of Abraham, from Abraham into Ishmael and Isaac and the sons and Moses and all these things. They are united in the Abrahamic faith. So they came from all over the place, but some people say from Iraq, from Egypt. Palestine, they had a little empire for 70 years on some parts of the land, but so did the Egyptians and the Persians and everybody else. So there are people out there that try to say that the heart of Judaism is actually in Yemen, south of Saudi Arabia. I'm really not very well versed on that part of history, so you have to ask somebody who knows more than I do.
Well, you answered a lot of my questions, so thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate your questions. But yes, there are people who say a lot of things about the history of this group of people or that, but I'm not really very well versed on this. Again, the numbers here are 813-239-9663. You can talk about anything that we have talked about in the past few weeks. And I'm not in the business of promoting books and authors, but really, if you are interested in the U.S. role in the Arab-Israeli conflict and how we use the weakness of the Palestinians, or the division among the Palestinians, or the fact that they are occupied, or the fact that they are the weakest party in these peace negotiations, it is fascinating to read the book The Blind Spot by Khaled Al-Jindi. The Blind Spot, it traces the U.S. role in this whole relationship, especially the peace process since 1917, since the Balfour Declaration. It goes through every American president that we have seen since then. Fascinating book. You might find it a little bit academic, but really, if you read the first 50 pages, I think you will you will love it and appreciate it, and will shed some light. There is something going on. There is this feud going on between Tucker Carlson of Fox News and Ilhan Omar. She is of Somali origin. She came here as a young refugee and became representative of a district in Minnesota in the Congress. She wears the hijab, and she's pretty progressive, if you ask Muslims. Like, for instance, she was walking in the LGBT parade, and so many Muslims were furious. Why would she do that? So it doesn't mean that Ilhan Omar represents every Muslim out there, or that there are only one kind of Muslims out there. There are all kinds of shapes and color of Muslims. But obviously for Tucker Carlson, he is like, this guy is threatened by her. So listen to this report, and I have to say I had to take this segment from the damage report. Listen to this, and maybe we will be opening the phone lines. It's fascinating. It's been going on back and forth between them in the past few days. So this is Tucker Carlson and Ilhan Omar, but with some background on what is really going on between these two, because if you are on social media, there is a firestorm going on. This is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. Listen to this conversation.
The United States is the kindest, most open-minded place on the planet. The U.S. has done more for other people and received less in return than any nation in history by far.
So that's Tucker Carlson last night on Fox News, delivering sort of the foundational pacifying myth that his commentary is designed for the audience. It's, we have been great, we've done so much, now we don't have to do anything. And understand that that came at the beginning of a segment designed to attack Representative Ilhan Omar in an incredibly racist fashion, even for Tucker Carlson, even for Fox News. We're gonna show you that video. But there it's that we've done so much and we get no credit. That to me, like you could, there's different levels of that. But for the people watching Tucker Carlson, that's all they want to believe is we're greater than we get credit for. Why is everyone complaining when we've been so nice?
It's so weird. No, I guess the end game for a lot of the folks like this guy is praise. Mm-hmm. Bow to me. Show me that I'm superior to you. You're a lesser person than I am. You know, you came to me and I gave you this and you dare say anything bad about me? Why do you care? You know, sometimes people give to charities and stuff, they do something back, give back, maybe they made it out of a certain community and they're giving back, but they don't, you don't ever hear about it. Mm-hmm. And they go, you know, I'm not looking for the praise. I'm looking to actually help that community because that's what I care about. Not about the tax write-offs strictly, or not about you talking about how great of a person I am so I can get some award, but because I care about that community. So does Tucker Carlson care about the country or does he care about getting praise? Because by the way, you didn't do anything. You didn't do anything.
Oh, we're going to have some examples of exactly that too. And we're going to tie in the reporting from yesterday of Mitch McConnell on reparations and the fact that his great-great-grandparents had some had slaves. But let's move into the Ilhan Omar. So here is the first of two videos of him attacking the new representative.
Ilhan Omar has an awful lot to be grateful for, but she isn't grateful, not at all. After everything America has done for Omar and for her family, she hates this country more than ever. In a recent piece in the Washington Post, the reporter put it this way, quote, in Omar's version, America isn't the big-hearted country that saved her from a brutal war in a bleak refugee camp. It wasn't a meritocracy that helped her attend college or vaulted her into Congress. Instead, it was the country that had failed to live up to its founding ideals, a place that had disappointed her and so many immigrants, refugees, and minorities like her, end quote.
What you saw there seems completely reasonable. First of all, the idea that if you get into elected office, you're not supposed to question anything or change anything is ridiculous. And he doesn't actually believe that. He doesn't want Republicans to get elected and then just like twiddle their thumbs all day long. The idea that if you believe that there's anything wrong with the United States, you hate the country is again something not consistently applied to Republicans and Democrats. Everybody thinks that the country has problems that need to be fixed. It's just when it's us thinking that the problems need to be fixed, then it's hate, of course.
What was the whole thing about make America great again? I remember some guy had
why did it need to be made a great? Wasn't it already great?
Why do you hate America?
But of course, it's like virtue signaling. It's like being triggered. All of those things, politically correct. These are all terms that are applied only in reference to when you're a lib. If you're a progressive and you do something, these terms are applied to you. If you're on the right and you do the exact same things, language just doesn't apply to you, I guess.
The final message is shut up.
Exactly. But his final message is far worse because right there he's saying, how dare you not? It's not enough that he puts his boot on your skull. You have to kiss the boot. And she's not being grateful enough. But he goes on and attacks her some more.
If anything, that's an understatement. Omar isn't disappointed in America. She's enraged by it. Virtually every public statement she makes accuses Americans of bigotry and racism. This is an immoral country, she says. She has undisguised contempt for the United States and for its people. That should worry you, and not just because Omar is now a sitting member of Congress. Ilhan Omar is living proof that the way we practice immigration has become dangerous to this country. A system designed to strengthen America is instead undermining it. Some of the very people we try hardest to help have come to hate us passionately. Maybe that's our fault for asking too little of our immigrants. We aren't self-confident enough to make them assimilate so they never feel fully American. Or maybe the problem is deeper than that. Maybe we're importing people from places whose values are simply antithetical to ours. Who knows what the problem is? But there is a problem. And whatever the cause, this cannot continue. It's not sustainable. No country can import large numbers of people who hate it and expect to survive. The Romans were the last to try that with predictable results. So be grateful for Ilhan Omar, annoying as she is. She's a living fire alarm, a warning to the rest of us that we better change our immigration system immediately or else.
So look, that.
Welcome back to True Talk. This is your host, Samar Jarrah. I think this is very dangerous, what Fox News is really doing, trying to label Ilhan Omar and immigrants, and you know, the fact that you cannot criticize the country. I mean, since when we cannot criticize policy or cannot criticize the government or anything? I mean, for God's sake. So anybody can criticize anybody except when it comes to immigrants. And what's scary, and that's what I want to go back to in this conversation, is that it's like borderline asking people to do something about it and scaring them about immigrants. Let's continue the conversation, because we're going to listen to what Ilhan Omar answered Tucker Carlson racist discussion about her.
Vaulted into Congress. This country allowed her to get vaulted into Congress. Were you in support of her getting vaulted into Congress? Mm-hmm. You were against this. Does that mean you're anti-American? Because America got her into Congress, but you were against her getting into Congress. Mm-hmm. You anti-American POS. Anyway, on top of that, he goes, they hate us. She's not fully American, mm-hmm. Because they didn't assimilate correctly. All these things. And in the survival or else lines.
Now or,
or else. You're going to die. Take up arms and find anybody who looks like this, because they're anti-American. We have to change it or else. We have to change it or else. That's a cry for violence.
Yeah.
Keep it real. Just because you don't say the N-word to a black person doesn't mean you're not a racist. I'm just tired of that old. There's been four times now. The arguments are so transparent by now. Mm-hmm. Just because you don't explicitly say the word doesn't mean you're not a racist. Just get away with that.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense anymore. It never did.
So if you watch our program, what do you learn about Ilhan Omar? Is that she's working with Bernie Sanders on a plan to get rid of student loan debt. If you watch Fox News, she is undermining America and will probably kill you and your family. That's the lesson. Again, by the way, and this is just a reminder, when you go on Tucker Carlson's show, this is what you are normalizing. This is what you are making more mainstream. That you do your little segment and then you go home, and then he spreads the replacement myth of white supremacists.
And after they say he didn't say it, go, or else what? Yeah.
But, and by the way, that's the same guy that called Iraqis illiterate semi-primitive monkeys. Just a reminder of who he is. So, and again, I want you to be ready for this sort of argument to be made again, because we've seen it twice in 2 days with him and with Mitch McConnell. So he says they need to be grateful because of all the great things we've done as a country. We are a big-hearted country that allowed these refugees to come in. He's referring to from Kenya, so she's Somali, but they were Kenyan refugees. So at the time, unfortunately, the internet doesn't go back that far enough. Was Fox News advocating for those Kenyan refugees to come in? If Tucker Carlson had been on the air, would he be doing segments about how we should bring them in because of how big-hearted we are? I mean, we don't know, we can't go back, but I do know that he was against anybody coming in from Syria, obviously. He's not a fan of any migrants coming in from Latin or South America. So we can speculate that he, in fact, would not have been in favor of that. And this is how it works. You can go back to any examples of this. The conservatives will be arguing against any beneficence, any big-heartedness. Some people who go beyond that, who are good people, will fight to allow some people in. And then the fact that those people did it will be used by conservatives later on as evidence of why now we don't need to, because we've already done so much. When Mitch McConnell was defending not doing reparations, he said, do we really need reparations? I mean, after all, we fought a civil war. We did the Civil Rights Act. We elected a black president. Did you do any of those things? No, conservatives fought against all three of those things. Some people did the right thing. And the fact that some people did the right thing will be used by conservatives in all cases to make sure that nothing else good is ever done. And that's just the pattern that plays out. We drag the country forward inch by inch, and our efforts are used as evidence of why we need to move no further.
And then once it's done, they take credit for it. Oh, I remember back in the day when we worked for civil rights. No, you didn't. You'd have been against it. If you were around Martin Luther King was doing everything he was doing, and by the way, many other civil rights activists, you would have hated them just with the rest of the conservatives that were doing it at the time.
Exactly.
Keep it real.
Don't give me BS about Republicans versus Democrats. We're talking about conservatives, and conservatives were consistently against all of this. It doesn't matter what party they happen to identify with, thanks to realignment at that particular period in American history. Talk to Dinesh D'Souza if you want to spread that BS. Anyway, I do want to give you Ilhan Omar's response to this incredibly, shockingly, blatantly racist and Islamophobic rant by Tucker Carlson. She said, not going to lie, it's kind of fun watching a racist fool like this weeping about my presence in Congress. No lies will stamp out my love for this country or my resolve to make our union more perfect. They will just have to get used to calling me Congresswoman, which is great. She goes on to say, she was asked this morning, actually. She said, I truly believe he is a racist fool. She says, Carlson is weeping about the fact that we have an African-born member of Congress, the type of people that the likes of him think come from S-hole countries.
Okay, this is True Talk on WMNF 88.5 FM. I don't think she was supposed to say that, but she had some bleep. But you were listening to this back and forth going on between Tucker Carlson and Ilhan Omar, who I mentioned is an American immigrant refugee who was elected to Congress. And for some reason, Tucker Carlson is picking on her. He cannot tolerate the idea of open-minded, intelligent, smart, hijab-wearing woman can be in the Congress and can be really talking about politics. And it's interesting because, you know, there are people who elected her. She did not just get into the Congress, I mean, without constituents electing her. So this scary tactics with the news that there are raids on immigrants, people do not differentiate between this and that. And I think it's fearful. I mean, even my poor mom who has to listen to the show, I bring her with me and she listens to Democracy Now! While we're driving. And I was explaining to her, because we heard that on NPR News, that there will be raids. So she didn't know raids on whom in particular, but I told her on immigrants, and she said, like, how are they gonna know where to find them? I said, Mom, I don't know. But she says, like, how could this be? Why my kids are here? And I said, you know, this is not reflective of everything that is here in America, because you come to the station, you see the people, they don't agree to these tactics. But she says, but I am scared. So it scared my mom, who really is here, of course, legally. I am here legally. My husband here is legally. But the people out there, this is fear-mongering. And, like, we need to do something about it. What does he mean? What does he mean when he say we need to do something about it? We need to, like, support the president, for instance, or we need to do something about brown people getting to Congress, or I really don't understand. So again, we have like 7 minutes to go. 813-239-9663, 813-239-9663. You can go to dj@wmnf.org, like this nice guy from Seminole who loves True Talk. Thank you so much for sending your nice note. Again, you can send your emails to dj@wmnf.org, and I know you can text to 813-433-0885, and you can comment on any of what you have been listening to. Let's go to the phone lines. I think I have John. Good morning from Port Richey. Good morning, John.
Good morning. A couple of things. First, this idea that you should be thankful that what you got from America, that's kind of like his analogy to that someone who's being abused should be thankful to their abuser for giving them food and giving them shelter. That whole thing is just a false argument. And on Tucker Carlson, he's so disingenuous, like the rest of the conservative media. It's just amazing. I was watching I was listening to him the other day, and there was a lady that called up and said she saw this video on YouTube about how there is a baby in England who the English government stopped them from getting this medical care, took them off life support, and they watched him die. Well, I went and looked that up to see what was going on. It was about a baby that was born with a genetic defect that was fatal. And the doctor in the U.S. said he would take it. And also somebody in Italy said they would take the baby and treat them. But the British government refused the baby to leave the country. So they were talking about on Tucker Carlson, and he kept bringing up something about how the U.N. is getting in between you and your doctor and all this stuff. And they had Klaus on there. And he actually said what it really was about. It was about what's doing what's right for the baby. And what was in the best interest of the baby was not to prolong the suffering, that even if they had that surgery done, it still would have passed away. But none of those facts, none of that information was given. It was all just Tucker Carlson pushing his ideology that there's some big government bureaucrat getting in between you and your baby.
It's John, not only that, but like if you listen to more of, I stopped the segment, but if you listen to more, what he's trying to say is like white supremacist replacement theory. He tries to very, very smartly seep it into the mainstream media by saying that the brown people are replacing the white people and we should do something about it. Like when he says we should do something about it, it scares me as a slightly brown person out
That argument's going on for a long time because of all the when the Irish wanted to come over here or the Italians wanted to come over here. But it's still that like you said, it's that white replacement theory, as you said.
Yeah, that's what I have been reading about. Like that's what they espouse. But he cannot say that, but he is saying it in so many different words. That's my feeling.
Right, you're saying being code to the white supremacist.
Yeah.
What they call it, the white nationalist or whatever they call it. All right, thanks.
Thank you so much. That was John. Let me go to Rob and let me remind our listeners they can go to dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to take Rob from Clearwater now. Good morning, Rob.
Hey, good morning. Do you think that Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib have contacts with the Jews the most?
Can you, Rob? I didn't hear what Rob said. Rob, if you want to call again, but I think hate the Jews? I don't think so. Gino from Tampa, good morning, Gino. You're on True Talk.
Yes. That speech that Tucker Carlson just gave, it's been going on for years. For instance, they hated the white people during the 60s. They hated Martin Luther King Jr. They hated him to the core. So all you're listening to is a spiel from the 60s and the 50s. They do the same thing over and over again.
They don't get tired, Gino, obviously.
No.
They don't get tired. But the thing that I really started with is that progressive people in the Democratic Party and Black Lives Matter and all these groups, don't you think that they might change the conversation? I mean, the professor who was talking in one of the segments said it will catch up later on, but it is happening.
Listen, this is America. It's never going to change. I've even heard them say that black slaves should have been glad that they brought them over here from the way they was living. I'm serious. They said they should have been glad they came to America.
Yeah, I've heard that in one of my classes and I almost had a heart attack. And actually, I heard it also when we were talking about colonization. I had a student do something, it wasn't in the Arab world even, and she said, you know, at least they taught them English. So she thought it's worth it to kill 1 million people and at the end of the day learn English.
Right. You look at every colonization that the Europeans have made from American colonies, colonies colonizing in South Africa, colonizing even over in India. And look what happened. The split of India from, what's the one above it?
Pakistan and Bangladesh.
Right. And look what happened to you. All you see is murder. Murder and rape. They're good at murder and rape.
Yeah, thank you, Gino. I appreciate it. I hope things will change at least in my lifetime, because like Gino said, it's been going on for a while. And, you know, it's a very weird time, you know, like, for instance, yesterday there was a social media event at the White House. And, you know, there were people invited, like Sebastian Gorka, who wears Nazi things on his jacket, for God's sake. And then, like, things that you could not think is possible actually is happening in the White House. And then comes this guy and feels so bad that there is an African-American Muslim woman who wears the hijab, who not all Muslims support anyways, is in the Congress, and starts saying it's changing, like, the fabric of America. Well, we, you know, you guys, like Tucker, changed the original fabric of America and did that in the past. But anyways, I think we're wrapping up our show. I want to thank our listeners who donated to WMNF and to True Talk to keep us on the air. And I want to stress the importance of WMNF. This is the type of mainstream media. Without Democracy Now, True Talk, and shows like Rob's and WMNF, I don't think you will be listening to a Muslim American Palestinian woman like myself or Ahmed talking, or none of that, you know. Our voices are completely silenced. You will not see people like us on mainstream media, and definitely not on the Fox News. Thank you for supporting WMNF 88.5 FM. NPR News is coming now.